Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 6th of July, 2013, as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or you can hit me up on Facebook at facebook.com/Cyril Quinn, or go to my website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. Again, 347-215-6180 is your call number. Also, for my Blog Talk Radio audience, I am on the chat line as we speak, so you can certainly contact me there as well. We begin with the end of the Dwight Howard era in Los Angeles, an era that lasted all of, 82 games and 4 playoff games. As Dwight Howard is now, and it won't become official until July 10th, but Dwight Howard, of course, announcing that he is going to be a Houston Rocket come 2013-2014 season, 4 years, $88 million. He leaves the Lakers, leaves $30 million on the table. He leaves all the pressure that was going to come with leading a franchise in the post-Kobe Bryant era. And that eventually is going to happen. It may not happen as soon as we thought it was going to happen, but it's going to happen. And he leaves, you know, now he enters, you know, a team that is very good. The Houston Rockets made the playoffs last year, They have a budding young star in James Harden, who you can make a case is one of the top 10 to 12 players in the league, certainly an all-NBA caliber player, had a great year this season. They have an excellent shooter in Chandler Parsons. They have some nice pieces with Jeremy Lin, Omar Asik, though they're still looking to move Asik possibly for Josh Smith. We'll see what happens with that. And they still need a couple shooters. So, you know, I can't knock Dwight Howard for his decision to leave the Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, you had the usual drama last night when the Lakers come out there and when he comes out there and says it's still 50-50 or a fly to Mitch Kupchak. He had to throw that at you, you know, even though he knew he was all-time going to Houston. He had to throw that, shit, you know, just to add a little bit of drama, a little soap opera. It was too simple to just say, you know what, I'm going to Houston. It's been real. Good luck, L.A., and move on. He had to, you know, had to fly back. See Mitch Kupchak had to have people basically changing their articles in the newspaper. He couldn't, you know, couldn't be a straight shot going to Houston. That's it. But, you know, that's fine. So I can't knock his decision. He does not want to deal with the pressure of being a Los Angeles Laker. That pressure that it carries, you know, listen, the Lakers are the only show in town in Los Angeles. Do you understand what that franchise has been all about? You know, Kareem, Wilt, Magic, Jerry West, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, just name a few. He doesn't want to deal with that, and that's fine. You know, that's absolutely fine. I have no problem with that. The only reason that he would have stayed, would have had a chance of staying, is for the money. And if you're a Los Angeles Lakers fan, which I am, you did not want Dwight Howard staying because of the money. Didn't want that. You didn't want that to happen at all. So, you know, he'll go to Houston. They'll be a very good team. I'll deal with what I think they're going to be as far as title contenders, which I don't think they are going to be next year. But I'll deal with that aspect later. Here's what I wanted to deal with. This idea, okay, that this is just a devastating blow to the Los Angeles Lakers, that this is embarrassment to the Los Angeles Lakers, that this is just, you know, the Lakers at their lowest of points. I mean, enough already, please. The guy didn't want to be here. Okay? Listen, he signs this year. You're not winning a championship. You're winning a championship with Boston. With what? Where were you going to do? Like, you signed Dwight Howard. You had no cap space this year to sign anybody else. You can't get Josh. I mean, you know, yeah, you could try to move Gasol, you know, for some pieces, but it wasn't, you know, you don't know when Kobe Bryant's coming back. It wasn't a championship team this year. So to me, I mean, the Lakers are in the best possible position as far as I'm concerned. You get him out of the way. Yeah, you might suck this year. Okay. See, in the NBA, people, there are two places you can be that you rather be, that you want to be in. The one, obviously, you want to be competing for championships. That's number one. But if you're not competing for championships, you want to be, well, three places. You want to be competing for championships. You want to be either ascending to compete for a championship like Golden State is, or you just want to just flat out suck. Okay? Lakers next year probably will flat out just suck, and that's fine. That's fine because you'll have about, depending on how much of a pay cut Kobe Bryant's going to take, and I'm sure he's going to have to take at least, you know, a 50% pay cut. I mean, you're making $30 million this year. You figure, you know, if he signs past next year, he'll be making, you know, probably play for, you know, anywhere from 13, 15, 15, 16 million. Now, he's going to take a pay cut if he wants to stay with the Lakers. You're going to have anywhere from probably close to 35 to $40 million of cap space to go out there and, you know, rebuild your franchise. And on top of it, you have a chance, an outside chance, depending on when Kobe Bryant comes back, to be so bad that you're in the Andrew Wiggins sweepstakes. I believe the Lakers had their first-round pick in 2014. I really have to check that. I believe they do have that first-round pick. They might not, but I believe they do. But the point is, you did not want Dwight Howard on your team and leading your franchise in the near future. Not now, not ever. He's not a leader, okay? He's not a guy who is going to carry a franchise to a championship. They made it to the finals in Orlando. You know what? Boston lost Kevin Garnett. They got lucky. They would not have beaten Kevin Garnett. They would not have beaten Boston with a healthy Kevin Garnett. So let's be honest. Let's be honest about that. Yeah, they called a huge break in that 2009 postseason. And they took advantage of it. But after that, where was Orlando after that? Now, you can blame management, made some shady moves, some spotty moves. But again, from a Lakers perspective, I mean, I don't get the sense that Lakers fans are shedding any tears. But, you know, the media is like, oh my goodness, the Lakers are just devastating and so on and so on. Like, calm down. Like really? This is the worst thing? I mean, him not signing with the Lakers is the worst thing ever? I mean, to me as a Laker fan, I mean, the lowest point of the Lakers is when Magic Johnson had to retire because of the HIV virus. That was, to me, the lowest point. And they went through, you know, those rebuilding years before they before they drafted Eddie Jones and before they signed Nick Van Exel, those couple of years, say 92, 93, 94, were, you know, some bad years. Went through some bad years with those particular teams. This, you know, yeah, I mean, listen, the West is loaded. You're not doing anything in the West this year. Look at the Western Conference right now. With San Antonio, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, Golden State, Memphis. The West is loaded. You're not doing anything in the Western Conference this year. You know what I mean? Please. Again, you want to be in a position. You want to be in a position where you're competing for championships, you're ascending to a championship, or you just outright suck. The worst place to be is a team that's 45 to 50 wins, first to second round, and that's your ceiling. I mean, that's what the Knicks are right now. I mean, period. That's what the Knicks are right now. That's what the Hawks have been for the past 5 or 6 years. Where does that get you? Nowhere. You can't get high draft picks. And you don't have any cap space because the guys you have on your team take up all your cap space. And you have overpaid superstars, overpaid guys on your team who are getting paid like superstars. So, you know, I think from a Lakers perspective, they're in a good spot. Are they going to suck this year? Okay, they might suck this year. But again, I just don't see this being a loss at all to me. My biggest fear going into the offseason was that he would sign with the Lakers. Not that he would not sign with the Lakers, but that he would sign with the Lakers. That's my biggest fear. That was my biggest fear. And thankfully, he protected us from ourselves by going to Houston. Now, the Lakers have some issues with D'Antoni, absolutely. With the Jim Buss, absolutely. There's no two ways about it. But one issue they don't have right now is number 12. That's one issue they don't have right now. That's one issue that they frankly don't need right now. From a Houston perspective, listen, you get a guy who, when he's focused, when he's in tune, is probably the best big man in the league. But you're also getting a guy who, at the first sight of controversy, at the first sight of adversity, can go off the cliff. You're also getting a guy who is not a leader. You're also getting a guy who, you know, I'm hearing all this talk about, Kevin McHale, great big man, you know, in terms of instructional, Hakeem Olajuwon. I want to see Dwight Howard work on his game and become a dominant offensive player. Because to me, he's been the same offensive player for like the last 4 years. Even before, now this year, I'll give him a pass this year based on terms of the injury that maybe he was not able to work on basketball skills, rehabbing from the back. Okay, that's fine. But the previous 2 years, he was the same player 2011, 2012 that he was, 2010 that he was in 2009, offensively. There had been no development on his game. And that he was just getting basically 20 and 10 off physical ability, offensive rebounds, things that have you 10 rebounds would just fall in his lap. So, Hakeem Olajuwon is there. Is he going to take the time to work with Hakeem Olajuwon? Is he going to feel like Hakeem has to come to him, or is he going to call Hakeem? I don't know with this guy. You never know with this guy. And he's not the number one. I'm telling you one thing, I'll tell you another thing. He's not the number one option on that team. I'm sorry, he's not. James Harden is still the number one option on this team. How is he going to be able to handle that? He thinks, that's the thing about it. He thinks he's the number one option. Right now, he thinks this is my team. It is not. He may be the biggest name on the team, but he's not their best player. Still James Harden. And they're going to run their offense through James Harden, if they have any sense. And I think Mikal is a pretty good coach. But again, I understand why Houston made the move. I understand why. Yeah, I perfectly understand why they made the move. Daryl Morey, give him credit for reshaping the franchise. In 2 years, he's acquired, you know, arguably the best center in basketball and acquired a legit top perimeter player who's 23. So give him a ton of credit, clearing the cap space, not taking on bad contracts. And still, he might not be done. Still might go out there and try to get Josh Smith. I don't think that's going to happen, but, it's a possibility. As far as them and title contenders, please, they're not as good. First of all, not as good as San Antonio. They're not as good as OKC. They're not as good as the Clippers. They're not as good as the Golden State Warriors. I think they're fifth. You want to say they're a little better than Memphis? Okay. They're probably a fifth seed, in my opinion. They're not title contenders. They can't win a championship next year with that team. And they're going to need some more shooters, okay? And bottom line is none of those guys know how to win. I mean, Dwight Howard hasn't won anything. James Harden's been to one NBA Finals, but he was the third wheel on that team. So that's not a championship team next year. They're going to have to add first of all, we're going to have to see their chemistry together. Two, they're going to have to add some pieces. And three, we're going to see where Dwight Howard is in his career. The big winner yesterday, to me, was Golden State. And we'll talk more about that in our NBA segment. That was the big winner yesterday. Not Houston, not the Lakers, Golden State Warriors. Just getting started here, 347-215-6180 on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, a unlikely champion and the captain returns. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. After the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180 is your call number as we discuss the world of sports. The women and ladies final is over. Marion Bartoli is your champion, 6-1 over 6-1, 6-4 straight sets over Sabine Lisicki, who had upset Serena Williams a couple of rounds ago, leaving the quarterfinals, in that dramatic three-set match in the quarterfinals. But Marion Bartoli pretty much dominated this match. One of the more unlikely Grand Slam winners you'll see, 28 years old, had made 47 Grand Slam appearances before winning a title. That's the most appearances that any woman has made before winning a champ, before winning a Grand Slam. You know, she's kind of quirky. She's kind of, you know, has been a good player over the better part of her career. Been around for a while. But again, just season, you know, here's the thing, you know, you season the moment, take advantage of an opportunity. She did not face a player in the top 10 in this tournament. Did not face one player in the top 10. So, congratulations to her. She's kind of in the mode of Conchita Martinez, that unlikely Grand Slam winner. But the difference is Conchita Martinez actually beat Martina Navratilova, who's an all-time great. So it was a little bit more difficult for her. But Bartoli, again, you know, when Serena goes out, that just opens up the floodgates, because that was a shocking loss earlier this week. Serena Williams going out as this, you know, she was playing some of the best tennis of her career. So Bartoli takes advantage and wins in straight sets, 6-1, 6-4. 6-1, 6-4. Men's final tomorrow, the dream matchup that everybody wanted to see before this tournament started. Andy Murray, Novak Djokovic. Djokovic winning one of the all-time classics. And it seems like every other Grand Slam tournament, Djokovic plays in an all-time classic. I mean, you look at some of the matches he's played this year's French Open, that Australian Open last year against Nadal. Djokovic just plays in these just monumental matches. And yesterday he beat Juan Martin Del Potro. I thought Del Potro was going to win this tournament in a five-set thriller, 4 hours and 43 minutes. Del Potro giving him all he can handle, but no Djokovic wearing him, you know, coming through in that fifth set, 6-3. He gets Andy Murray seeking his first Wimbledon championship. And you think Murray coming in, Murray has a couple things going for him. Number one, how much did that match take out Djokovic? And I know he's one of the most well-conditioned players on tour, but still, you're on the court almost 5 hours, but he'll get a day off. So we'll see if there's any fatigue factor as far as Djokovic goes. And number two, Murray having won the U.S. Open last year, is not that pressure of, you know, can he win the big one? Still has some pressure to win Wimbledon and become the first British player since Fred Perry back in 1936 to win Wimbledon, but not nowhere near the kind of pressure that he's had in the past couple of years. Murray, of course, lost to Roger Federer last year in a quality match. I kind of like Murray, even though I think Djokovic is a better player. I kind of like Murray. I think it's his time to finally break through and win this tournament. Everything has broken right for him, having to face no Nadal, no Federer. So I think Murray will win. I kind of like Murray in four sets. But again, Djokovic seeking his seventh Grand Slam. Derek Jeter is going to have a rehab assignment in Scranton tonight. He's expected to play five innings, trying to recover from that broken ankle injury he suffered last October in the playoffs against the Detroit Tigers in the ALCS. So, you know, we'll see how that progresses. Of course, he's already had one major setback in April that pushed his return all the way back into basically, you know, the All-Star break. So we'll see how that comes out. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk some more. We'll talk some baseball. The defending champs struggling. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. 55 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of Circle Review, classic Kobe Bryant unfollows Dwight Howard and puts up a picture of him hugging Paul Gasol. Kobe. Kobe, you know, he held it together as long as you could possibly think he could, as far as being politically correct with Howard, you know, his decision and the whole nine. And Kobe, I don't ever get the sense that Kobe Bryant wanted Dwight Howard back. I think he was very much just kind of like, playing, you know, not so much taking one for the team, but just kind of, you know, being as PC as he possibly could be, considering what he really was feeling about the situation, about Dwight Howard in particular. I would love to see, once all the dust is settled and the smoke is cleared, Kobe really come out. I'm sure he'll go all in on Dwight Howard, but the unfollowing him for Twitter is hilarious to me. It's vintage Kobe. It's definitely, that's Kobe Bryant I know. Well, I don't know, but that's Kobe Bryant I've been accustomed to seeing over the years. He makes perfect sense when I heard that he unfollowed Dwight Howard on Twitter. Baseball action last night. Tough loss for Baltimore. The bullpen, Jim Johnson, who has been a disaster this year, blows another save. They're up 2-1 in a ninth. He, you know, misplays a ball that should have been, instead of two on and no out, should have been one on and one out. And, you know, Yankees get a couple of hits. He walks the batter. Yankees get a hit with the bases loaded. Vernon Wells, I believe, drives home the winning run. And the Yankees get a much-needed win over the Orioles. Yankees have been struggling of late, so that was a big win. Orioles have played well against the Yankees this year. Came into that game 6-3 against the Yankees this year. So and have had a lot of success over the past couple of years at Yankee Stadium. So they played well. But again, you know, Baltimore has to do. I mean, I don't know. Listen, I think you have to go out there and look at a closer. I mean, to be honest with you, I think you have to at least give it a look. I mean, Johnson with these closers is amazing. Other than Marion Rivera and, you know, Craig Kimball, these guys from year to year are like goaltenders in hockey. You don't know what you're going to get from year to year. I mean, I know Nathan's been good the past couple of years. Again, Kimball, forget Marion Rivera is Marion Rivera. So, like, he's been good for, like, the last 20 years, it seemed like. But, and he's been dominant again this year. Talking about in terms of Rivera, but these closers, you just don't know. And you can get closers. I mean, those bullpen guys are probably the most gettable guys in the trade market. So those, you know, forget about this. You know, quality starting pitchers are going to be hard to get, but not bullpen guys. Those guys can be had in the market. There are a ton of them out there. So if you're Baltimore, you seriously have to look at getting a closer, and along with probably, I mean, again, everybody's looking for another starter, but definitely those close that Jim Johnson has now with 7 blown saves this season. He's been just awful since like middle of May. Washington over, you know, takes out San Diego 8-5. Nationals playing a little bit better, though they still find themselves in a still find themselves well behind the Atlanta Braves. San Francisco Giants fall to the Dodgers 10-2 last night. They get knocked around at their home ballpark. They are now 7 games under 500 in last place in that division. Listen, it's hard to go back-to-back, but I thought the Giants, were going to have a big year this year. I didn't see this coming whatsoever. The starting pitching has been bad. The offense, after a hot start, has calmed down. Want to see what the Giants try to do. Giants have, they develop players as well as anybody. They have some prospects. They have some guys, you know, they have some guys coming up. Or the Giants might just say, hey, you know what, we're not going to repeat. We're going to keep our prospects and make a run at it in 2014. But they, you know, right now they have some major issues. Again, nobody's running away from this division. So certainly not a time to panic if you're the Giants. But I just wonder what they're going to do moving forward. considering how much they're struggling right now, I certainly think it will be in the Matt Guards of sweepstakes. I don't know if they want to give up what it's going to take, though, I think, to get a Cliff Lee. Because I think, listen, I think Philadelphia, if you're Philadelphia, you, like, if a team blows you away with some prospects, you're going to have to move Cliff Lee eventually. So they're going to be, you know, they're not that many starters on, you know, Ricky Nolasco. They're not that many starting pitchers on the open market as far as trades goes. But right now, the Giants are in desperate need of one, and right now they're struggling big time. They're struggling big time in that National League West, which is one of the worst divisions in all of baseball right now. Red Sox keep rolling. They just take out the Angels. Red Sox, best record in the American League, on top of the AL East, playing great baseball. And you think about it, think about the Red Sox and Dodgers, and think about that trade. When the Red Sox unload all those salaries, Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, and think about the direction of those two teams since that. Where the Dodgers are at and where the Dodgers are at and where the Red Sox are at. Now the Dodgers, luckily to this pool who has saved Don Mattingly's job in this season, have been decent. But for what they're paying in terms of salary, in terms of their payroll, they've had an underachieving year. Red Sox go out there, rebuild their team, get the great pitching, you know, they get a real manager in, and they go out there and, you know, right now, again, look like one of the best teams in all of baseball. Of course, it starts with Lester, Buchholz. Lackey has been great since he's come back from injury. Their bullpen, you know, has been solid. Bullpen's been solid. David Ortiz is, defying time with how well he's performed. So, you know, this is the Red Sox that we saw win championships in 2004-2007 without question. Looking at the Dodgers, looking at all these teams with these ginormous payrolls who are struggling, whether it's the Dodgers, the Angels, you know, baseball is a different game. I mean, you can't go out there and expect to spend your money and just eliminate all your problems. It doesn't work like that. Player development is now become the number one reason. Player development, farm system development, prospects. That's how you win. That's how you win in today's game for baseball. Period. You know. So there's no two ways about it. Dodgers struggled. Dodgers, Angels struggled. You look at the Cardinals, what they've done. You look at the Giants, look at Texas. All those teams, Texas, the Cardinals, Boston, all those teams have developed players and have quality, decent farm systems, especially Texas and St. Louis and Oakland as well. And, you know, it's a new day in baseball, without question. It's absolutely a new day, and we'll see how these big market, big spending teams adjust to that. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Corbin Review. When we return, we'll talk Holy Grail Magna Carta. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Corbin Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. 5 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this last edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Of course, you have the Jay-Z's new album coming that comes out officially, comes out July 9th, but many people through various downloads and Samsung and this whole promotional thing that he had already have heard it. I've heard it. I've heard it and listened to it a couple of times, by the way. And, you know, I walked away from the album. First of all, the promotion of it was ingenious, okay, to begin with. Coming out, Game 5, halftime of the NBA Finals, number one sporting event during that particular time period, you know, middle of June, was, again, that's why Jay-Z as a businessman, as a guy who can market anything, got me hyped for the album. It made me forget the fact that his last album, studio album that he came out with solo, don't count Watch the Throne because it was, you know, with Kanye, was terrible. It made me forget about that. And that, after he did come out with that album, I was like, you know what, he should retire. Because he just to help him, the time has passed. But overall, I thought this album was a quality album. Production on it was just, you know, you can't have better production on an album than what he had. Now, again, he had Rick Rubin, he had Pharrell, he had Timbaland, he had a who's who producer. So you expected the production to be strong. But even with that said, it was still like, you know, the production from start to finish was flawless. It was flawless. And again, this is where, you know, as a Jay-Z fan, since the beginning, this is where Jay-Z is at in his career right now. And I made this analogy, and had a buddy of mine who loves hip hop agree with this analogy. Jay-Z is like Michael Jordan with the Wizards right now. That's what, and you say to yourself, well, that's an insult. No, it's not. It's not an insult because Michael Jordan with the Wizards was a guy who was still putting up over 22 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Basically, okay, and he still was one of the top 15 players in the league. It was just the fact that he wasn't Michael Jordan in his prime, and people just couldn't handle that. I was fine with Michael Jordan with the Wizards. I loved those 2 years were great to watch him be amazingly at the age of 40, 41, still compete on a high level with these young players. It was amazing to me. You want to call him selfish for, you know, having put more attention on himself than then rebuilding that franchise, fine, and that's a fair point. But still, his level of play to me was, you know, tremendous. Again, he was 41 years old. He's playing, you know, basketball is a ultimate young man sport. So for the most part, so, you know, that's where he's at right now. You'll never see Jay-Z. And again, I thought, you know, his pinnacle years '96 to 2007. A buddy of mine thinks '96 to 2001 because the Blueprint One was basically a perfect album. I would say 1996 to 2007 because he had two classics that followed the Blueprint in the Black Album and American Gangster. So I'll go 11 years that he was near or at the top of his game. That Jay-Z is done. I mean, he's just not at that point. I mean, he's at a different – the guy is a Mongol right now. He's not, you know, he's not in the streets. He's not at that point in his life. As a father, he's had $400 million in the bank. So that Jay-Z, you'll never, like, the Jay-Z you heard in the Black Album, the Jay-Z you heard in Reasonable Doubt, the Jay-Z you heard in Blueprint One, the Jay-Z you heard in, you know, with Hard Knock, like, that Jay-Z is gone. He's not battling anybody. There's nobody to battle. There's nobody to battle for Jay-Z. Nobody, I mean, Nas, he has no equals. Nas is his buddy right now. Once you put Nas at, there's no rapper comparable for him to battle. I mean, please. I mean, going at it with somebody like Rick Ross, and he hasn't had a battle. I'm just giving you a name. I mean, or Young Jeezy, please, come on. So he's at a different place in his life right now. And again, that album, I thought lyrically, there were some things that if you... You know, there were some blasphemous things on the album. I can understand some criticism that he received from, you know, from Christians as far as, you know, some of, you know, with the song Heaven, and there's some things that you can pick out if you want to. That's fine. Everybody's right to their opinion. For the most part, it was a quality album for the most part. If you're just a fan of rap, hip hop, from start to finish, again, the production and even the Beyonce song. And I don't even like when Jay-Z and Beyonce make songs together. I don't know if there's one song, especially with Jay-Z as a lead. I mean, Beyonce, Crazy in Love song, she was the lead. But songs where he's been the lead and she's been the feature, I've basically hated. Not this song. Not on this album. I actually liked it. So, again, overall, I think it was a very good album. I would definitely recommend a purchase of it if you haven't downloaded it or got it on or picked it up through other means. And I think that I'm fine with this Jay-Z. Come out every 3 or 4 years, you know, do some collabos or, you know, do some production, develop some artists. Just don't come out next year or the year after. Come out again every 3 or 4 years with an album. Remember, his last album hadn't came out since 2009, his last solo album. So that's the, you know, important piece to remember. So I'm fine with Jay-Z at this stage, at this point in his career. I don't have, again, I will never, ever have the expectations that he's going to produce an album the likes of American Gangster, the likes of Reasonable Doubt, the likes of The Life and Times of Sean Carter. That day is done. And just accept it. There's bottom line, that day is done. It's like, you know, Kobe Bryant will never be the best player in the NBA anymore. That's fine. He's still going out there. He's still going out there and putting 27-5-5 on the board. So it is what it is. But again, let's be honest. This rap is a young man's sport right now, a young man's game right now. You know, Kendrick Lamar, you have Wale, you have guys like that. I believe J. Cole. It's a young man's French Montana. It's a young man's game. Period. It's a young man's game. So that's fine. It is what it is. But again, quality album. I certainly recommend it. And again, a key piece in this album, no Kanye. Sometimes less is more. A disavowed attraction, no Kanye. And I don't think that was by accident. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll touch on the Celtics' new coach and on who is Aaron Hernandez. We'll talk about that coming up on this latest edition of the Sirokin Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Sirokin Review. Of course, you have tomorrow you're going to have Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic going for the Wimbledon Championship. This rivalry seems to be the one that's going to carry tennis for the next couple of years. Djokovic and Murray, they've met a couple times in the last couple of years in Grand Slam finals, whether it be the Australian Open this past year, last year U.S. Open final, they're both still very young. Federer, of course, is obviously on the decline in the twilight of his career, and they had all, frankly, you know, you wonder outside of the French Open, you wonder how effective he's going to be on any other surface. based on his injury history, especially with that knee. So this seems to be now the rivalry with these two matching up again. Murray going for his first Wimbledon championship, second major overall. Djokovic seeking championship final, seeking major number seven and his second Wimbledon championship. Of course, he beat Rafael Nadal 2 years ago in 2011. So Brad Stevens is the new head coach of the Boston Celtics. I was kind of surprised. I was shocked by this hire. Was surprised by this hire. I didn't see it coming. They did a very good job. He and the Celtics are keeping this under, you know, under wraps. I didn't hear any leaks leading up to this. Listen, college coaches in the NBA have not mixed. We can go Rick Pitino. You can go Richard John Calipari. You can go P.J. Carlesimo, whoever. I mean, whoever you want to go down across the board. Lon Kruger. You know, college coaches have just, you know, especially in the NBA, have not gotten the job done. And there are a number of reasons. The biggest reason why they haven't gotten the job done is because as a college coach, you know, you are, as a college coach in college, it's your program for the most part. You're recruiting, you're making decisions on playing time, you have a shoe deal, basically apparel deal with the school. You are like the big man on campus. If you're a Coach K, you're a Roy Williams, you're a Lute Olson, you're on that level, you know, Indiana with Tom Green. As an NBA, you are just another piece to the puzzle. As a college coach, okay, you are like you know, it's just you get in where you fit in, basically. And I think a lot of coaches, college coaches that have that just can't handle being another piece of the puzzle because they were like the man in college, and once they were, when they would run the school, run their program. I think that's a big – and then, I mean, besides the money, besides the managing of egos, I think that is the biggest reason why college coaches don't succeed is their own ego, which kind of bodes well for Brad Stevens because from everything you hear, this guy basically has no ego. And everybody has an ego, but this guy is basically – he's fine with the players getting the credit. He's fine with being, you know, kind of the guy behind the scenes. He's fine with just – not being out there. I don't think you'll see Brad Stevens on a lot of commercials or magazine covers or things of that nature. He just wants to coach basketball, which, again, bodes well for him moving forward. And, again, if Boston trades Rajon Rondo, which they absolutely should, I think it's even it's a perfect situation for Brad Stevens, taking over a young team, a team in transition, rebuilding, not dealing with any star players. Okay, they trade Rondo. Who would be their biggest name player? You know, what, Avery Bradley, Jeff Green, a guy like that? Because all, you know, Pierce, Garnett, Jason Terry, those guys are gone. The final piece of this is moving Rajon Rondo. I don't care what Rondo says about liking Brad Stevens or be willing to, you know, having an open mind. I don't care what Rondo says. You move Rajon Rondo if you're Danny Ainge. That's the first thing. Danny Ainge should be thinking about that as we speak. Where to move Rajon Rondo, and there's absolutely a market for Rajon Rondo. You can trade, you know, you can get some draft picks for him. You can get some shooters. You can get some nice pieces for him without question. For Rajon Rondo, despite his history of being somewhat of a malcontent and being kind of a hard head as far as, you know, kind of difficult as far as coaches goes and dealing with Doc Rivers and whatnot. There's no way Rajon Rondo's going to listen to Brad Stevens. I mean, Rajon Rondo barely listened to Doc Rivers, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce. And yeah, tough enough dealing with him. You're asking a college coach to corral Rajon Rondo? I mean, you got to be kidding me here. With no veterans on the team to kind of control Rondo or to kind of sit Rondo down and say, hey, man, this is not, you know, calm down here. No, you trade Rajon Rondo immediately. You don't wait. You trade them as soon as possible, and that's when the transition of trying to rebuild will be complete. Right now, Rajon Rondo is the final piece that you need to get rid of in order for the Celtics to be in full rebuilding mode. Also, with the NBA, we talked earlier about, we touched on it. I thought the move for Golden State to get Andre Iguodala was brilliant. You know, you have a starting lineup of Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Iguodala, you know, Andrew Bogut. I mean, that is a David Lee. That is a big-time starting lineup. Harrison Barnes off the bench. You can re-sign. You can now probably try to re-sign Jerry Jack. They're going to have to let go of Carl Landry. Draymond Green off the bench. I mean, to me, it was a tremendous move by Golden State. Again, I think Golden State is a legit contender to come out the West without question. They won't sneak up on anybody next year. They'll be a year older. They'll have a healthy David Lee. They are a team on the rise. They are definitely a team to watch out for in the near future, right now. Again, Iguodala is the best two-way players in the league. He's won a gold medal. He'll give them some veteran leadership, and this is a perfect fit. You're getting a defensive guy who is a reluctant shooter offensively and who is unselfish. Iguodala was one of the five guys, or one of six guys in the NBA to average at least 13 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists. Okay, so he's a facilitator. He's one of the best finishers in the league. Again, a great defensive player. Guy can defend three positions. Okay. So that is a guy that, you know, those wing defenders are invaluable to have on your team in the NBA now. They're invaluable. The Nicholas Batums, Tony Allens, those guys are the Paul Georges of the world. Those are guys that you want on your team. Not too many teams have those guys. You can get those guys, they're extremely, hold a lot of value. And tremendous move. I thought the Dwight Howard thing might even have been a smokescreen, to be honest with you. I thought Iguodala was the guy that they really wanted from the start. And again, 4 years, $48 million. It's a nice contract. It's a good contract. Perfect for what he can do. Market value without question. 4 years is not a long time. It is a great fit for him. He will fit perfectly in that offense. Iguodala has improved his jump shot, by the way. He has improved his outside shot. He certainly will have driving lanes because the floor will be spread, having shooters like Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, Harrison Barnes, those guys on your team. Even Draymond Green can step out and shoot a three. So again, Jared Jack, if they're able to re-sign him, tremendous move for the Golden State Warriors. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Have a special program coming up on Tuesday, our Cyril Quinn Review Summer Series, where we look at stars of the future. We'll have a special guest that we'll be interviewing as they hope to break into Hollywood, and which is basically a difficult task, but this particular person certainly has the ability and talent to do so. We'll talk to them, see how, you know, kind of get their feel of what the profession is like. Again, that will be coming up on Tuesday evening. More details are coming up, so stay tuned for that. Just going to wrap up the program again. We began talking about Dwight Howard going to the Rockets, leaves $30 million on the table. And it's kind of, it's kind of not a big deal for him to leave $30 million on the table because the first 4 years of the contract basically are the same between Houston and the Lakers. The Lakers can guarantee him the last year of the deal, but keep in mind that Howard is young enough to sign another max contract. He's only 27, young enough to sign another max contract with Houston, or he can sign even into the contract. He can sign an extension to stay with the Rockets if they so choose to keep him. So, and there's no state tax in Houston compared to having a 13% state tax in California. And that state tax, ask Phil Mickelson how real the state tax in California is. So it's real, to be honest. It's completely real. if you're a millionaire, you have a lot of money, that's state tax, that California state tax. So the money, not that big a deal. It's more about wanting to run as far as possible away from the spotlight that is L.A. He hated D'Antoni. I don't think he was in love with Kobe either. And I think that Dwight Howard understands himself well enough to say that he did not want to deal with having the pressure of carrying a franchise, even in the post-Kobe Bryant era. Now, he comes out and says, hey, didn't want to, through various sources close to him, comes out and says, didn't want to be Kobe Bryant's sidekick for the next 3 or 4 years. No, that's fine. You're going to be James Harden's sidekick for the next 4 years. So really no difference, because that is James Harden's team. Make no mistake about it. The offense is going to run through James Harden. He is the number two on that team. It is not. If anybody thinks that Dwight Howard is number one option on that team, you're just not paying attention. James Harden is their best player. James Harden is going to facilitate that offense. James Harden is going to take the most shots over the course of the game. James Harden, whose hands do you want the ball in down the stretch? A guy who shoots 49% from the free throw line, or a guy who is one of the best finishers and one of the best creators in all of basketball? I mean, you make that choice. From a Laker perspective, I don't think this hurts them at all. Addition by subtraction, they'll be able to go out and get multiple free agents next season. You'll have LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, John Wall, Paul George, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, just to name a few, okay? Mark Gasol, just to name a few, okay, free agents. That doesn't include the guys who are going to be on expiring contracts, who the Lakers could, make moves with. The Lakers are fine. It's just, you can question who's pulling the strings for the Lakers in terms of Jim Buss. That is a major question mark. And, they still have the D'Antoni problem to deal with. But as far as being able to get acquired players, Lakers will be fine moving forward. They're gonna take a year where they just are not a factor. And for the most part, they were not affected this year. So I don't see the difference. The difference is they made the playoffs this year. Next year, they probably won't make the playoffs. So I don't see, as a Laker fan, how that could be the worst thing ever. And to me, if you're not competing for titles, then the best place in the NBA to be is at the bottom or near the bottom, to where you can get a high draft pick and to where you have enough cap space to go out there and get free agents for the future. That in between, you do not want to be – don't want to be an 8-6, 6-7 for eighth seed in the NBA. That's not where you want to be. You want to be totally either competing for titles or rebuilding. You don't want to be that. You don't want to be where the Knicks are right now. You don't want to be where the Atlanta Hawks were this year and have been for basically the last 5 years. It's the worst place you can be in the NBA. So again, I think it's a win for the Lakers. I think it's a semi-win for Houston. And I think this deal is going to end up working out for both teams. I don't see Houston as this championship contender. I just don't this year. They're going to have to add some pieces. We're going to have to see the chemistry with Howard and Harden. Omar Asik is already talking about he doesn't want to play with Howard. And plus, from a basketball standpoint, I don't think they mix anyway. So we'll see how that works out. If they can get Josh Smith, that'd be great for them. If not, they go out there and get some shooters that can spread the floor for Howard and also James Harden to give him room to operate. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I will see you Tuesday with the Cyril Quinn Summer Series Special Part 1. So long. Have a great weekend.